Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here. Today is December 15th. You're at the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors meeting. If everyone could please rise for the pledge, and if you could remain standing after the pledge, we'll have a moment of silence for Stanislaus County Sheriff Deputy Department Employee Sergeant Jeremy Fielder, and then we'll have our invocation after that by Reverend Marvin Jacobo from the Ministry Network.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Master Jeremy Fielder represents the best in all of us. He represents the courage, perseverance to guard and protect the best of us. Master, we ask that you would give his family peace and rest during these difficult times. May it remind all of us to be grateful for the men and women who watch over us every day, whether it's police or whether it's fire. Master, I know that I surely take them for granted, and sometimes that's a good thing. But the truth of the matter is they watch out for us, they care for us, and I thank you for the privilege you give us to have men and women like Sergeant Fielder in our midst. We do thank you for this county and for the leadership. We thank you for the privilege you give us to be a part of this great nation. I thank you for the men and the women that you have chosen by the citizenry to lead us and guide us and direct us to care for the government, the public policy issues that come to us. Many of them are extremely complex. Give them wisdom to discover options and solutions to our challenges. Give them vision into the future. And may our citizenry rally together and around our leaders to work together to make Stanislaus County a healthy, prosperous place for all. And I do ask that these proceedings would be held in mutual respect and mutual civility. Amen.
Thank you, Marvin. And thanks, Marvin, all year long. You've helped coordinate all these invocations, and all the pastors have shown up. So I thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to get into public comment here in just a second. I just want to acknowledge the Leadership Modesto class that is here today, Monica and her leadership, part of her Leadership Modesto. We thank you for being here. Okay, we will move on to public comment. This is a time for anything that is not on the agenda that anyone would like to have a comment about. It's 5 minutes or less. And I have no speaker cards, but Catherine, come on down. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Okay. Good evening, supervisors. I will try to speak quickly, hopefully within the 5 minutes. And good evening, and Supervisor CEO Risen and County Council Doring. I'm here representing Salida MAC tonight. For those who might not be familiar with it, the Salida Municipal Advisory Council, and I'm here to share good news from the community of Salida. When I became chair of Salida MAC in January 2014, with approval from Supervisor Withrow, I launched a program called Take Back Salida to abate graffiti and blight in Salida. As you know, because you have a copy of the manual I compiled, we've used a multi-pronged approach to combat graffiti. We don't just abate it. We go after taggers who do it, and if possible, help the justice system seek prosecution. This has helped dramatically to deter vandals from tagging Salida, except for one very determined problem vandal who is currently in the Stanislaus County Jail, so he's not tagging up Salida, Modesto, or anywhere right now. In the past 2 years of the program, we have abated a whopping 585 tags. From light poles, from signs, from sound walls, from sidewalks, from streets, from homes, from businesses, pretty much any surface, you name it, we've abated it. The number of tags abated is actually much higher than 585. That's just how many we have photographs of. We would forget to take photographs early on in the beginning, and sometimes our residents forget to photograph the tags they abate. A few numbers, more numbers for you. The most prolific tagger has tagged 124 tags that we've removed, and the aforementioned determined vandal has tagged 61 tags in the last 6 months. Having such a prolific tagger has made this day very difficult to achieve, but I'm here tonight to share the very good news and announce here first that the walls of Salida are graffiti-free. Let me be a little more specific, though. The visible walls from any public place that can be viewed from a car are graffiti-free. We still have streets, alleys, and a few other not-so-visible places that harbor graffiti, and our sound walls look like patchwork quilts. But all the same, the message here is that the community of Salida does not tolerate graffiti and the vandals who do it. It has been a big effort and teamwork to achieve this. I want to thank Jamie Eggers and Henry Carrillo of Environmental Resources, Matt Machado of Public Works, Sheriff Adam Christensen and his team, D.A. Flatiger, Chief Skiles, and we've even had help with some other taggers from Chief Galen Carroll of Modesto. I'd also like to thank Supervisor Withrow for his support on many levels to achieve this. But most of all, I'd like to thank the Salida community. We have 300 members on our Facebook group, and any number of residents are available to help report or abate graffiti. They are trained, and I'm so proud of them. Whenever there's a major tagging event, you'd think we had a nuclear waste spill. Tagging event on Finney, who can get there today? It's truly amazing that having tools like something as simple as these wipes is so empowering for people to take the cleanup of our town into their own hands. It may take us another year or two, but I will eventually come back before you again to report the town completely graffiti-free. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I have some Salida Mac newsletters for you.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks.
And Catherine, the thanks really needs to go to you. What you've done out there in Salida with this and the way that you've rallied the troops, and whether it's your emails to the sheriff or to our DA Flatiger, has just been amazing. And it really is amazing, the difference in Salida out there. I know in the 5 years that I've been here, from when I first started and actually started to notice all the graffiti out there to now, it's just amazing what you've done. So we thank you for, all that stuff doesn't happen without you. So thank you for everything you've done. Okay. Any other public comment before we move on? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to a consent calendar. Is there any item on the consent calendar that anyone would like to pull?
So, Chairman, if I could add some corrections to a couple items. Item A3L, we would just like to point out that there's a typo in that it should read Terry Withrow, District 3, and Richard Monteith, District 4. And on A30, we would recommend right now it reads a three-year term. Those are supposed to be four-year terms, so I would recommend that the staff recommendation be revised to reappoint Mark Etchebarn and Kenneth Beener to the Stanislaus County Planning Commission to four-year terms ending on December 31st, 2019.
Okay. Very good. Thanks, Dan. Anybody else, any other items, any other on the consent calendar like to pull? Anybody from the audience like to pull any item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar with the changes we just mentioned?
Motion to approve.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Very good. We will move on to our scheduled matters here. 6:35. Kristen. Angela, how are you?
Good. Good evening, Chairman Withrow, members of the board, Mr. Risen and Mr. Doring, Angela Freitas, Planning Director. The Planning Department's here this evening to present two items that are that relate to the fifth cycle housing element covering the period of 2015 to 2013. The housing element is one of seven mandatory general plan elements. However, it is the only element subject to state certification and having a defined timeline for adoption. The first step of our fifth cycle housing element adoption process is some ordinance amendments needed to fulfill state housing element requirements. With me this evening to present the housing element items is Kristen Dowd, and at this time I'll turn the presentation over to her.
Good evening, Chairman Withrow and members of the board. Presenting ordinance amendment application number PLN 2015-47, housing-related code amendments. This is a request to amend and add the following chapters of the Stanislaus County Zoning Ordinance to meet state housing element requirements. 2108 General Provisions, 2112 Definitions, 2148 Highway Frontage, 2156 General Commercial, and 2160 Industrial District are proposed to be amended, and 2182 Density Bonus for Affordable Housing and 2186 Reasonable Accommodation are proposed to be added to the zoning ordinance. And as Angela said, the county is currently in the process of updating our housing element to comply with the fifth cycle requirements covering the years 2015 to 2023. And the requested zoning amendment will bring Stanislaus County into compliance with state housing laws, which are required for certification of our fifth cycle housing element. The proposed ordinance amendments focus on three core areas. First, compliance with California Senate Bill 2, which deals with allowing for supportive and transitional housing and for emergency shelters. Adoption of a density bonus ordinance, and then third, reasonable accommodation policy to be compliant with state law. And again, we need to be compliant with SB 2 in order to have our housing element certified by HCD. California Senate Bill 2 requires that all jurisdictions treat supportive and transitional housing the same as any other residential use. And also to permit emergency shelters by right, which means without a discretionary permit in at least one zoning district, and to demonstrate site capacity in the zone or zones identified. To meet the requirements of SB 2, Chapter 2112 definitions of the zoning ordinance has been updated or proposed to be updated to include definitions for emergency shelter, supportive housing, and transitional housing, which mirror state law, and the definitions for single-family dwelling, two-family dwelling, and multiple dwellings has been amended to include supportive and transitional housing. The H1, C2, and M zoning districts were determined to be the most appropriate for the siting of emergency shelters. Currently, the emergency shelters are treated, they're lumped in with residential care homes, which are permitted in R3, high-density residential, C1 neighborhood commercial, and M industrial zoning districts, and in the RA rural residential with a use permit. So this proposed ordinance amendment would move emergency shelters from residential zoning districts into more commercial and industrial areas. The ordinance amendment proposes permitting emergency shelters in an M industrial zone and H1 highway commercial when located within a sphere of influence and C2 general commercial when located within a sphere of influence, provided a use permit is obtained. And the standards for these projects would be determined on a case-by-case basis in coordination with the relevant jurisdictions and would require public review as well as a public hearing. The ordinance amendment also includes a provision to permit up to 10 emergency shelter beds in the H1 and C2 zones for a total of 20 beds in both districts combined. Qualified H1 and C2 land must be located outside a sphere of influence, have public water and sewer, and access to public transportation at least 6 days a week. And after the 10 beds per zoning district have been produced, then a use permit would be required. In these cases, a non-discretionary permit would still be required, subject to specific standards, which include screening, on-site lighting, off-street parking, on-site management, security, and the length of stay. And these standards are also specified within the state law. The areas fitting the criteria laid out for the non-discretionary 20 beds include Denair, Keys, Salida, Wesley, and Grayson. The second part of this ordinance amendment request is the addition of Chapter 2182 Density Bonus for Affordable Housing. This chapter is being added to meet state law. The intent of the Density Bonus Ordinance is to contribute to the economic feasibility of affordable housing by offering incentives to developers consisting of density bonuses or other concessions of equal financial value. For example, if a developer reserves 5% of their total units for very low-income households, in exchange, the development may include 20% more units. And this is a voluntary program. that developers must request to participate in. And Chapter 21.08 General Provisions is also being amended to remove the current density bonus language, which is not consistent with state law. The third and last part of the zoning ordinance amendment requests to add Chapter 21.86 Reasonable Accommodation, also to comply with state law. This ordinance formalizes the process for persons with disabilities to request a modification or exception to housing-related development standards to accommodate a disability. So, for example, if a household needed to construct a ramp, but the ramp would encroach on a setback that we have, this provision allows them to apply for an exception to the setback standard. This requested ordinance amendment supports several policies included in the land use and housing elements of the general plan. The requirement for a use permit within a sphere of influence supports the sphere of influence policy in the land use element of the general plan. And the ordinance amendment would be implementing programs contained in both the current and proposed housing element, including Program 1.5 for density bonus ordinance, Program 2.4 federal and state housing law, Program 4.7 emergency shelters, Program 4.8 transitional supportive housing, and Programs 5.7 reasonable accommodation. On November 19, 2015, the Planning Commission held a public hearing to consider the proposed ordinance amendment. No one spoke in opposition or in favor of the project, and the Planning Commission voted 6-0 to recommend approval of the proposed ordinance amendment to the Board of Supervisors. And with that, staff recommends that the Board follow the Planning Commission's recommendation to approve recommendations 1 through 5 as outlined in the Board report and approve the ordinance amendment application and introduce, waive the reading, and adopt the proposed ordinance. And staff is available for any questions.
Okay, Kristen, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any questions from the Board of staff? Any questions from the audience? Oh, I've got to open a public hearing, yes. Just one explanation here. For the sake of Leadership Modesto, this is something that's gone through the Planning Commission. Like they said, it was approved 6-0. Sometimes it seems like on these things that we're just flying right through them and we're not even really paying attention, but this is stuff that we all are aware of and have looked at before. And by the time it gets here, a lot of times most of the questions and discussion is have been asked of staff already by the supervisors. So for what that's worth. Okay, I will open the public hearing. Okay, anyone from the public have any questions? Okay, we will close the public hearing.
I have a comment, please.
And we will bring it back to the board for comments. Supervisor Monteith.
I'd like to point out that actually this is not adding any additional area that's being zoned. It has previously been zoned for the uses, but this makes us qualified to take care of the requirements by state law. So I want to make that clear because I was confused on it to begin with, and I wanted to make sure that it was increasing the amount of acreage or area, but those zones have been in place in order to meet state law.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's correct. Any other comments from the board? Okay, if not, I will look for a motion.
So move.
We have a motion to approve all staff recommendations. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you, guys. Hey. You're still here.
One more item. Okay. And on this next item, in light of some clarification that staff's received from the State Department of Housing and Community Development, which is a state HCD, the agency responsible for certification of the housing element, staff will be asking that the board consider a revised recommendation this evening for the housing element general plan amendment item. While the fifth cycle housing element has a due date of December 31st, 2015, there is a 120-day period allowing for HCD review and local consideration of HCD findings prior to adoption. Thus, it is not required that the board act to approve the housing element this evening in order to maintain compliance with state housing element law. At the time that we scheduled the housing element for approval or for consideration of approval this evening, we were being provided with guidance by HCD that failure to approve by December 31st could put us in jeopardy of not meeting eligibility requirements for certain HCD grant funds. However, we have now received clarification that adoption within the allowed 120 days of the due date will maintain our eligibility. If the board were to approve the housing element this evening, it would need to be readopted to allow for consideration of HCD findings. HCD has 60 days to review and comment on the draft element. Our draft was provided to HCD on November 12th, and this afternoon we received our first feedback. Generally, HCD is okay with the housing element as drafted and has not identified any major deficiencies. We are still recommending that the board conduct a public hearing this evening so that we have an opportunity to factor any public comments received into the final version addressing HCD comments, and we are recommending that the board accept the proposed draft so that we have a board board-supported goals, policies, and programs in place as we address HCD's comments. At this time, I'll turn the presentation over to Christy.
Good evening again. Kristen Dowd, Associate Planner. And now I'm presenting General Plan Amendment Number 2014-104, the 2015-2023 Housing Element Update. This project is an update to the housing element of the Stanislaus County General Plan, covering an 8-year period from the years 2015 to 2023. And the purpose of the housing element is to reassess housing needs of existing and future residents of the unincorporated areas of Stanislaus County based on the most current data available, to propose specific goals, objective policies, and programs to meet those needs, and to comply with requirements of state housing law. The housing element must ultimately be certified by the California Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD, and found to be in substantial compliance with state law. And a certified housing element may be used as a qualifying factor for state funding. And in conformance with state housing law, the draft housing element contains the following information: an assessment of the housing needs in the unincorporated Stanislaus County, an inventory of available housing resources, projected housing needs, an inventory and analysis of available residential sites, an analysis of the constraints for building housing, and housing goals, programs, and policies. And just a bit of information regarding the housing element update process. Stanislaus County contracted with a consultant, Pacific Municipal Consultants, PMC, which is now part of Michael Baker International, to assist us in the development of the housing element. Five public workshops were held in the fall of 2014, and surveys were distributed in both English and Spanish. A total of 588 survey responses were received. And the whole schedule was based on the December 31st, 2015 adoption deadline, but as Angela said, we do have a 120-day grace period, which would end April 30th, 2016. For each housing element cycle, HCD determines the Regional Housing Needs Allocation, or RHNA, for each region throughout California. The RHNA represents the number of housing units each region must accommodate based on estimates of forecasted household growth. The RHNA is not a planning target. It is just a planning target, not a development quota. And in Stanislaus County, the Stanislaus Council of Governments, or STANCOG, is responsible for determining the RHNA for each jurisdiction. So for this RHNA cycle, which is the fifth cycle, HCD proposed that all of Stanislaus County would require 21,330 units covering the years 2015 to 2023. STANCOG then distributed the required allocations among the 10 jurisdictions with their input. And based on those allocations, unincorporated Stanislaus County was required to provide adequate sites for 2,241 units. And this is approximately a 40% decrease from the previous fourth cycle, which included a total of 5,568 units for unincorporated Stanislaus County. The proposed housing element includes an analysis of sites throughout the unincorporated areas of Stanislaus County to determine if there are enough sites with realistic development capacity to meet the RHNA. And in determining realistic capacity, we looked at things such as zoning, density, vacant property, and infrastructure capacity to determine whether land could accommodate future housing. And this analysis was also separated by income group. For example, vacant land with a zoning designation of high density, or R3, which has public sewer and water capacity, was counted towards the RHNA for extremely low, very low, and low-income units. That analysis determined that the unincorporated county currently has a capacity to accommodate a total of 5,756 housing units without the need for rezoning of any land, and that number of units exceeds the RHNA allocated to the county for the fifth cycle by 3,613 units. In terms of extremely low, very low, and low-income housing, the analysis showed that the county could realistically accommodate 1,594 units which exceeds the RENA for those income categories by 726 units. The housing element includes five goals intended to serve as guidelines for county actions and decisions in housing-related matters. Each goal has a number of programs, which include specific actions designed to implement those goals. And those goals are: Goal 1, encourage the provision of adequate, affordable housing, including units for rent and ownership for residents of all income groups, including extremely low, very low, low, and moderate income households. And Goal 1 includes programs that deal with first-time home buyers, interagency coordination and support, home buyer counseling, Stanislaus County COC, building code and housing enforcement, density bonuses, billing and design standards for energy conservation, housing for special needs populations, affordable housing development in Salida, and affordable rental housing. Goal 2 is to maximize housing choices and opportunities throughout Stanislaus County and has programs that include residential accessibility, fair housing, funding and technical assistance for special housing needs, information and referral, farm worker housing, state and federal housing programs for farm workers, second units, universal design, overcrowding, and residential care homes. Goal 3 is to conserve and improve Stanislaus County's existing housing stock. And the programs for Goal 3 include housing programs, the home rehabilitation program, municipal utilities, and the maintenance of assisted units. Goal 4 is to designate sufficient sites for all types of residential development required to meet projected housing needs, which would be the RENA. And the programs for Goal 4 include the general plan review, vacant and underutilized site development, infill development, minimum residential densities, mixed-use development, emergency shelters, transitional and supportive housing, and extremely low-income housing and areas with new infrastructure capacity. Goal 5 is to minimize governmental constraints to affordable housing in Stanislaus County. And the programs include regulations and fees, plan developments, one-stop permits, building code review, duplexes, mobile homes, reasonable accommodation, and Measure E. The changes being proposed from the current housing element to the proposed are mostly technical in nature. And just to summarize, it includes updates to household economic housing conditions, housing market and special populations data sets, integration of the housing-related code amendments, which we just heard, an updated analysis of impediments to fair housing choice, the addition of disadvantaged unincorporated communities information, an updated housing sites inventory, including the analysis of realistic development capacity and infrastructure constraints, the fifth cycle RENA, and updated zoning standards, fees, and exactions. The housing element goals and programs were also updated. The majority of the updates included refining language, updating responsible departments, funding and timeframes. References to the redevelopment agency were deleted. Two programs were added, maintenance of assisted units and affordable rental housing. And references to regional collaboration on affordable housing strategies were included through a number of policies and programs. The board's priorities for infrastructure projects were added, and a number of programs with similar content were actually combined. As Angela said, the housing element is one of seven elements of the Stanislaus County General Plan, and state law requires all elements of the general plan to be internally consistent. The six other elements of the general plan are in the process of being updated, and planning staff reviewed the 2015-2023 housing element draft for consistency with both the current and the updated general plan elements and considers the document to meet general plan consistency. And as Angela also said, we have some revised recommendations for the board this evening, and they include to conduct a public hearing to accept comments regarding the draft housing element and to accept the proposed draft and direct staff to address any comments received, including comments from HCD, and to return the document to the Board of Supervisors at a later date for adoption. And staff is available for any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Kristen. Any questions of staff from the board? Supervisor Chiesa.
Maybe you can explain why the HCD lowered the RENA numbers, or they've lowered them so drastically.
I believe it was due to the economic downturn between the cycles.
Simplify, and again, this is the civic lesson. I know we keep doing civic lessons, or else this meeting would be 10 minutes long. So the RENA numbers, the regional housing numbers, is this pie in the sky of what the growth is going, how much growth is going to occur. And we're stuck with having enough land zoned, doesn't have to be built, but land zoned for this housing. We've never hit the numbers. We've never come close to the numbers, even in the greatest economic boom of the 90s and early 2000s. We didn't even come close. So Stanislaus County, through the COG and the cities, have been arguing that there's too much land set aside or zoned for the specific for housing. And now they've dropped it 40%. And I'm guessing, just based on, if I asked you how many permits were issued last year, it's probably 100 housing permits or 50. I don't even know. But Daenerys had a few and Keys has a few. But literally, we have a couple of thousand sitting there, and we're probably 20 years out at current, and the number will continue to increase. So it's kind of a bogus deal. So you heard it from us.
But it's a good thing it's gone down.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's,
yeah.
For sure.
Very good. Okay, and that's just another add on to that lesson. This is like we're in class today, but the other part is that there's so many things that the state requires and mandates of us here in the county. A good chunk of our budget, the money is spent. We have $1 billion, $1.1 billion is our budget, and I'd say probably 75% of it is money that just flows through us and goes to where the state tells us to spend it. Not only do they tell us where to spend money, they then ask us to match a lot of times that with our share of property tax dollars. So a lot of what happens here is stuff that's beyond our control. It comes from the state and is passed through to us. So any other comments from the board? Okay, we will now open the public hearing. Okay, now this is the time that some of you should stand up and ask some questions. Mm-hmm. Okay, seeing no public hearing, we will close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board for action. Do we have a motion?
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Yeah, the amended recommendations.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the amended staff recommendations. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you,
Angela.
Very much.
Thanks, Kristen. Good job. Okay. We will move on. Item B9. Dale Skiles. Good evening, Dale.
Good evening, Chairman Withrow, members of the board, CEO, and County Council. I'm grateful to be here. I'm Dale Skiles, Office of Emergency Services and Fire Warden. I'm here to open this up, presentation up, and it is the approval to enter into an agreement with Everbridge Incorporated to provide a mass notification system in Stanislaus County. Also joining me will be Sheriff Adam Christensen, and the one doing much of the work on this project, and I'm grateful for Paul Gibson, Administrative Manager, OES Fire Warden. So with that, I'll turn it over to Paul, and he'll lead us through a few slides here.
Thank you, Chief. Good evening. So tonight, we're talking about a mass notification system. We have a brief definition here of what a mass notification system is. It's a system that supports communication to large numbers of citizens via telephone, email, text, or other electronic methods in an emergency to inform, warn, and coordinate a response. During the Boston Marathon bombings of 2013, mass notification systems were in use by some responders, but there was an after-action review by the Massachusetts General Hospital in which they determined one of their key findings was that for themselves, they felt like that they should have had a mass notification system to be able to communicate to their own staff in particular. They were sending emails out to their own staff in terms of a response that was occurring, but everyone was so busy because of the response that they weren't reading the email and they had no other way to communicate to staff. And so buildings were being closed. They were asking folks via email to relocate. SWAT teams were being assigned to guard the buildings, and staff weren't aware of all of these things happening because they weren't able to read their emails because they were so tied up with response. And so as a result, they felt strongly that they should have had a mass notification system and that they should pursue implementation of one. So tonight we're talking about a particular mass notification system from a vendor named Everbridge. They are in use currently by many California counties, including Merced, Alameda, San Francisco, San Mateo, Sacramento, Kern, Santa Barbara, Ventura. That's an incomplete list, but many of the larger counties that are currently using the system. Their system, the Everbridge system, provides unlimited messages for a fixed price versus pay as you go. The Everbridge system would be integrated with federal alerting systems, the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, known as IPAWS, and the Wireless Emergency Alerting System. If you've ever received, for instance, an Amber Alert on your cell phone, that utilizes the WEA system, the Federal Wireless Emergency Alerting System. This system would be integrated into those federal standards as well. The Everbridge system uses GIS-based message targeting, so in the event of an incident in which we would send out a mass notification, we can identify the extent, the impacted area on a map, and then be able to select individuals within that area in order to send out notifications. It allows customization with caller ID, so depending on who's sending the message, we can have different caller ID appearing. So for instance, if a message is going out from the city of Turlock to their residents, it would appear as with a phone number from the city of Turlock, as opposed to a system we have today where all messages appear to come from the Office of Emergency Services, regardless of who's sending them out. It can send out messages, it can send out voice messages. You have the ability to create user groups, units, distribution lists, including for non-emergency notifications. For instance, we can, in the system, build groups of, for instance, county employees and send out notifications to them. Every county employee is an emergency service worker, a disaster service worker. So in the event of an emergency, we might need to notify our staff, and we could, within the system, build different structures based on county organization. We can simultaneously publish to social media platforms, including a key one for Everbridge, which is the social networking platform known as Nixel, which Everbridge acquired this year, which the Sheriff's Office is currently using, and which really brings some pretty sophisticated features in terms of allowing citizens to readily opt in just using their cell phone to receive notifications of an incident, an event, et cetera. It provides redundancy and continuity of government operations. This is a hosted platform. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. But it's hosted at data centers in California and in the state of Colorado, and they automatically back each other up. So even in the event of a disruption of county technology services, we'd still be able to use the system, assuming we could get to the internet from any device. The Everbridge product uses a flat rate system, allowing unlimited messaging. It's web-based, there's no software required. We don't require servers or communication hardware of any sort. It targets the individual rather than the device. And so an individual that registers or for whom we would register, we can list up to 5 different communication methods, text, voice, email, et cetera. And the individual can determine in what sequence they would prefer to be notified. When we send the notice out, we just send it to the individual. The user has already identified how they would prefer to receive those messages. It can also be two-way, so we can send out messages to a group of responders, for instance, and they can positively affirm they received the message and they're able to respond or not. It offers text-to-speech conversion, including language conversion, so we can type up a message that would go out to our citizens, and we can have it sent in multiple languages over the telephone. The Everbridge agreement that we would be entering into is a result of an RFP, a request for proposal done in 2014 by Alameda County. There were a number of Bay Area counties that were participating in this, but Alameda was the lead agency. They released the RFP. They specified they wanted to use this software as a service model, this hosted model where the vendor controls all the hardware, provides all the infrastructure, and it's a flat rate expense. Alameda ultimately selected Everbridge. And as I've sort of alluded, several other Bay Area counties have subsequently enrolled under this agreement. The RFP and contract specified that other tax-supported entities, such as counties, could make use of that negotiated agreement. And so under those terms, we're seeking to also enter into an agreement. It's a one-year agreement with 4 price-guaranteed one-year renewal options. And so the extent of the obligation is 1 year at a time. The county could choose to renew in subsequent years, and the price is predetermined. There's no escalator on price for at least the next 4 years after the first year term. The product is licensed to a jurisdiction. In this case, it would be Stanislaus County, and it can be used by any other jurisdiction within the confines of Stanislaus County. So the cities could use the system, law enforcement, fire, all at no additional cost. A separate instance of the system could be specifically set up for communication with county employees. And so we could have one system for mass notifications. We could have a separate system that we would use to communicate with county employees. It includes an opt-in portal, a pretty rich portal, for citizens to be able to determine what level of communication they would like to engage with the county. And so it can include non-emergency communications, newsletter, road closure information, or only emergency notifications. Staff recommendation is that the Board of Supervisors authorize the General Services Agency to enter into a one-year agreement with Everbridge Incorporated for four one-year renewal options. The first year cost is not to exceed $98,150 to be funded jointly between the Sheriff's Department and the Office of Emergency Services Fire Warden. I believe Sheriff Adam Christensen has a few comments as well.
Thank you, Paul. Outstanding presentation. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Dorig and Mr. Risen. Adam Christensen, your sheriff. And I would add that we all know how critically important it is to share information. It's certainly one of the things that we're learning every day, how important it is to not only share information, but work collaboratively with other agencies in sharing intelligence information specific to public safety. You know, having just returned from Israel, I discovered that that is one of their keys to success in defending their people and their nation, is that they share information on a daily basis with 28,000 police officers simultaneously, all at once. If they have a credible threat, that goes out. And so even in here in the United States, credible threats are something that we face, and we want to be able to share that information with the community, with our employees. And again, this system absolutely meets our needs. It's an effective tool. I've talked to my colleagues who use it. They find it very effective in making sure that we keep not only the community informed, the public, but our partners, federal, state, and local, as well as our employees. So we believe that this is a very effective tool that will meet not only our needs, but the needs of public safety countywide. And we also believe that this will be an effective replacement for some of the other tools that we've used along the way that have become less effective or obsolete.
Okay, that's it. Are you going to bring it to the board? Any questions for the sheriff or for Dale or for Paul? No questions. Any questions from the public? Okay, one question, just quick. Talk about the shortcomings of what we have existing. I know we talked about all the things that this will do now. Maybe talk about what we have right now and how it doesn't accomplish a lot of this stuff.
Well, from my perspective, we've always been a Nixel user, and Everbridge has, they've acquired Nixel, so it's an easy transition for us. And specifically, when you look at the technology that they utilize, it's much more robust, and it's much easier for people to opt in or opt out. It's easier for us to get information out, and the other tools we've used sometimes fall short because of advances in technology or the partnerships. In this case, Paul mentioned partnerships with the Weather Service and some other federal partners. Not everybody can provide the same kind of technology, and so as in any tool that we implement, there are advances by organizations or companies that continue to provide those services, and right now this is the most progressive option with the most robust capabilities available to us. And because of the ability to tag on to somebody else's RFP, made it even easier in making our decision and looking at what other counties have analyzed, reviewed, and selected as their tool for mass notification.
Chairman Withrow, I may add that with a, as a county of having 4,000 or close to 4,000 employees, we have looked at how might a department or a division notify their employees of just a relocation for a day, for a week, for a month. How might they do that after hours? And the best thing that we can come up with right now is you would send a mass email out to your folks. But not everybody checks their email off-site, away from work. And so this would be a system that would use be set up specifically for the use of the county as well as for other agencies. But I'm speaking on behalf of just the county and our employee notification. It'd just be a, it's a phenomenal tool, something that we do not currently have today.
And again, as Paul mentioned, you know, from any internet-connected device, that means that from our mobiles in our patrol cars, a sergeant or watch commander can log into this system and send out information, a mass notification message, or to specific employees, or even to specialty teams to respond. So you can activate your SWAT team. You can activate additional resources. This is just a very, this is an excellent way to not only deploy your resources, but share information.
Very good. Stan, you want
to? I was just going to share with you, we've had our share of frustrations out of the administrative office with our current system. In fact, just today, my executive assistant tried sending out a message to the entire senior team. Some of the folks got it. I didn't, as well as two other people on my team didn't get it. But I did get a text message that said delivery of a message to your device was attempted but was not successful. So it couldn't get me the message, but it could get me the message that it couldn't get me the message. So
how soon, if this is approved by the board tonight, how soon would this be up and running?
You want to speak to that?
Sure. Once we enter into an agreement with Everbridge, our understanding is that we would immediately engage their implementation team. We'd start planning and getting the system going as soon as possible. What I've been told is that we're probably about 6 weeks out from getting the trainers here to would actually be training users on the system. So the system could start running immediately in terms of importing existing groups and individuals that we have in our current system. But before we had a group of folks really sufficiently trained on it, it would probably be 6 weeks out.
Okay. Thank you. Catherine, did you? I know you had a comment there.
Good evening again. I didn't plan to speak, but sometimes I watch all of you up here, and when you hear a presentation, and if someone from the public doesn't comment, I think that you probably wonder if anybody even cares. So that's why I thought I'd comment, so you know somebody cares. So in Salida, we've been using Nextdoor, which is, I describe it to people as Facebook for neighborhoods. And it has the ability on there to send a mass text to all the residents who subscribe. And we've been using Nextdoor, it's probably going on about 2 years now. And we have just out of the 13,722 residents of Salida, which is the last U.S. Census population count, we have just over 1,000 that use Nextdoor. And our Salida Mac does use it for things like we've had two gas leaks where PG&E has shut down roads over the last 2 years. And we've send out, it sends out text alerts, kind of like the Megan's Law one for, is it Megan's? The one for the missing children.
Amber Alert.
Amber Alert, sorry, wrong child. But the other thing, though, it does allow is it allows residents to send out texts, mass texts. And so the last one that's gone out in Salida was for somebody who needed baby clothes, which I think probably a lot of residents don't quite consider that an emergency. So it would be nice to have something like this to where there are things like gas leaks, or even with the closures of the Pellendale and Kiernan overpasses when they have construction. Like, we've had three closures in the last 2 weeks, and the fire department gets notified of it, but we don't. So we find out if we see the flashing sign, or if we go to try to cross overpass and we can't because it's blocked. So I would think something like this is very helpful. And I've been using Nixel too for several years now. And that's how we find out the first news of what's going on in Salida. Thank you, Sheriff, is from Nixel, just like with the recent whole incident with the U-Haul. I'm not going to go into that. Don't want to drag your meeting out. But I just would like to say that this would be fabulous to have something like that. And I support it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. Okay, any other questions? If not, we'll look for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be more than happy to make a motion. I also want to make part of this motion that we get this out to the cities. I noticed that each jurisdiction can participate in this and utilize the system, and what a great asset for all of our jurisdictions to use. And so I want to make sure that training is made available to our cities. Whether they participate or not, it's up to them. But I want to make sure that's included, so that's part of my motion.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you guys very much. Okay, we'll move on to item B10. Madeline. Good evening, Madeline.
Good evening, Chairman Withrow, Supervisors, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. Madeline Schlepfer, Behavioral Health Director. I'd like to acknowledge Dan Rosas. He's our manager over our Mental Health Service Act, and I appreciate his help tonight with the PowerPoint. So, ready? Okay. Just quickly, there are five components to MHSA, and we're basically only going to be discussing the first one, which is the community services and supports tonight. This component comprises 80% of the funding that we get from MHSA. A plan update is required every time we make changes to the annual update, and the annual update comes to you usually in June. I think this one that we recently had came on June 2nd. Again, just briefly, these were the board priorities that we were operating under at the time that we were considering the programs that we're bringing to you tonight. Briefly again, community service and supports includes full service partnerships, which are these high intensity programs that provide whatever it need, you know, whatever it takes 24/7. They are low staff to client ratio. CSS also includes what's called general system development, which is open to a broader range of individuals, and outreach and engagement. 51% of the CSS funds have to be devoted to FSPs, and we do meet this criteria. The effectiveness of FSPs are substantiated by research and our own outcomes. And I just briefly want to show again the outcomes that we presented to you, I think, in June, which had to do with the prior fiscal year. And specifically looking at the acute psych hospitalization. So this is for all of our FSPs, and we did see almost an 80% decrease in psych hospitalizations. So there are three CSS programs coming to you tonight. The first one is our FSP for children and youth. Again, as I mentioned, FSPs are very intensive. For all ages, which the individuals must have a serious mental illness or a serious emotional disturbance for children and youth. We have noticed in our data that in the last couple of years, we've seen an increase in the number of children and youth who are requiring hospitalization. It was kind of interesting to see that 5 years ago, we had approximately the same number that we project now, and it really dipped and now has gone back up again. We're hoping to utilize the proven FSP techniques with minors that have worked with adults. These include outreach and engagement, intensive case management, counseling, psychiatric services, and especially working with families. The FSP services are 24/7, whatever it takes. There's a staff on call after hours to respond to any kind of situation that might come up in the home or wherever the situation occurs. Should they go to the emergency room, the staff would meet them there to try to see what they can do to avoid a hospitalization. These minors that have been in FSPs across the state have been shown to have improved school attendance. Their grades improve, and there are definitely reduced emergency room visits. The improvement in overall well-being is likely to prevent and lessen the severity of the mental illness in the future by building resilience. I'd like to acknowledge Supervisor O'Brien for his comments about perhaps looking at the broader group of children. And so we have, with our FSP and with our next project, the Crisis Intervention Program, we are going to give priority to individuals with Medi-Cal, but we're open to other children and youth based on the seriousness of their condition and program capacity. You know, these individuals do grow up, and getting to them early on is something that we believe is extremely important. We have, we will be choosing the provider by an RFP process for this FSP for children and youth. The estimated cost for the first year is $811,740. We really believe that the FSP will build resilience in children, and some of that has to do with being able to cope better with stress, believing in your own abilities, so that when you you know, you have to face the challenges of teenage life and early adulthood, you have the skills to do that. We are hopeful to help parents with guidelines to promote the resilience by fostering healthy relationships in the family and also strengthening families. So clearly, we're focused on the well-being here. The next proposal is the General Systems Development, which is our crisis intervention program for youth. We have had a crisis intervention program for adults, which has been very successful in reducing psychiatric hospitalizations. I should say that the FSP is an after hospitalization strategy. The SIP is a prior to hospitalization strategy, kind of like our 24/7 strategic plan, where we had a pre-hospitalization intervention and a post-hospitalization to try to overall reduce psychiatric hospitalizations. We will, this SIP would provide an opportunity to work with children and youth and their families in an effort to avoid hospitalization in a less stressful setting than an emergency room. You know, subsequent to the earlier presentation about this to the board, we got more information about the conditions that young people are experiencing in very busy emergency rooms. It's very hectic, chaotic, and they're also in close proximity to adult psychiatric patients who are also waiting for some disposition. So again, it was very difficult to work with them in that setting to try to get their families and them to a point where they wouldn't have to go into the hospital. So we had proposed that this program would be an innovation program, but it seemed that it was going to be more urgent. It takes a long time to get approval because we have to go to the state for innovation approval. And so we thought that making this a GSD would be more advantageous about getting a start on this more quickly. Again, the priority would be for those with Medi-Cal, but we are going to open it to other children and youth based on program capacity and availability. The SIP would be 24/7 availability. We would use up to 23 hours to stabilize the crisis, which usually can be done in that much less time than that, but that would be the goal. It is a one-year pilot program, and it's intended the intent is to amend a contract that we currently have with a provider who provides crisis services for minors, but it's an on-call service that they come when requested at the hospital. But again, they're limited to interacting there in the emergency room with individuals, and we think that it would be better if we were able to move these children and their families off-site. So we are looking at something in close proximity to the emergency room. The estimated cost for this program for the 1 year is $631,061. The last proposal is the expansion of supportive employment opportunities. Again, we're looking at creating job opportunities for persons and family members with lived experience, those that have either living with a mental health challenge or their own personal experience with a family member with a mental health challenge. I do want to acknowledge Supervisor DeMartini for commenting on the relationship with Alliance WorkNet. We have had meetings with them, and I want to acknowledge Christy Santos. It's been a really good start, and I think both of us are going to benefit from that working relationship. Currently, our individuals with mental health challenges require more basic support than Alliance WorkNet is able to provide at this time, and including, you know, teaching them appropriate social skills, providing assistance in coping with job stress, making sure that they're able to take direction, and also ensuring that they adhere to medication regimes, which is one of the reasons why it sometimes fails in a job, is they feel that now they don't need their meds anymore and they're going to do fine without them, and then of course they stop taking them, and then that becomes problematic. So our plan is to transition individuals to Alliance WorkNet once they have reached a level that is appropriate for the level that they take. Again, they will be doing things somewhat differently in the coming year, and so I think that we both will benefit from having meetings together. We've had a couple already, and we're going to actually start to flesh out what those parameters are for interface between the two departments. We are planning on having a joint staff meeting in the beginning of the year so that we can get started. You know, they have information on how to build relationships with the businesses in our community, which is valuable to us. And we also are able to provide them information on working with the clientele that we work with. So our outcomes would again involve stigma reduction, that people go to work, the private sector or wherever, and there's less stigma, they have a job, they feel better, and there's a sense of empowerment. We are looking to use 12 part-time paid positions to provide opportunities for mentoring and training in various programs, including our community-based organizations. The estimated cost for the first year of this program is $129,029. The recommendations are to adopt this plan update for December 2015, authorize the Behavioral Health Director to sign and submit this fiscal year update for 2015 to the Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission. They don't have approval on this, but we do have to keep submitting plan updates to them. Authorize the General Service Agency to pursue issuing a request for proposal on behalf of our department for services discussed in this agenda. Approve the First Amendment to the agreement for AspiraNet for the provision of a 24/7 crisis intervention program for children and youth through the end of the fiscal year. And direct the Auditor Controller to adjust our fiscal year appropriations and estimated revenues detailed in the program in the budget journal. And I am available to answer any questions that you might have.
Very good. Thanks, Madeline. Any questions of Madeline from the board? Supervisor O'Brien.
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank you for changing the FSP to allow private pay insurance to be a part of it. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me for the county to have a program in place, have capacity in that program, yet turn our backs on someone just because they're not on Medi-Cal. So I'm very glad that that has been modified. I do want to understand better why two of these components are being sent out to RFP and the third is not.
Only one is out to RFP. We are going to be operating the employment, the supportive employment will be our, they will be part-time positions with our department, although they will be outstationed in various locations. The one that is going out is the one that is not is the SIP. And we decided to, we do have a contractor who is currently providing these services, but on an on-call basis. And so we decided to just amend their contract. It is a one-year program. So I think that that's another issue, that if it is successful, we will need to strategize how we go forward with that.
Okay. And then I'd like to add a recommendation, and that is to bring back a report to the board on the FSP after a yearly report so that this board knows where it is. I'd like to be a standalone item and not buried in a mental health report or something like that. That's a standalone, so we have plenty of transparency on the item, how well it's doing, what the costs are, and so forth.
Can I ask a clarifying question? Is that for just the children and youth FSP or for the adult FSP as well?
Children and youth, what we're approving tonight.
All right.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a great idea, and we come back with part of our results-based accountability.
Right, exactly, and that's something we're committed to, so I absolutely think that's a great idea.
Numbers that would talk about the savings. Any other questions of Madeline? Thank you, Bill. Any questions of the audience? Okay, we'll bring it back to the board. I think this is a great thing, Madeline, and as Supervisor O'Brien said, it'll be great to come back and see the savings, you know, to determine if this is worth its weight here. And as you said, a lot of these kids end up being sent out of the county to who knows where, and just the exposure to them and their families and everything, what they have to go through. It'd be great to be able to not only come back in a year and see how many we've served, but also to then years to come to track those kids and see how they're doing as they move along, if they stay out of our system, and just try to show some successes. So very good. If no other questions, then we will look for a motion. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Supervisor DeMartini. Sorry, I'm. Go ahead, Jim.
If I'm, I want to ask, is all the money being appropriated tonight from this Prop 63?
Yes, it is.
And so that is under a different set of regulations where it has to be new programs?
Well, it's the nature of the programs have to meet certain criteria for CSS. That's why the FSP has to be for kids that have serious emotional disturbances, but the SIP does not have that criteria because it's a general system development, so it's kind of one of those interventions where you don't have that criteria. And the support employment is actually an outreach and engagement project. So they're all the community services and supports, and they all have to fit into the criteria set for Mental Health Service Act.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
So I believe what I heard was we'd like to add a recommendation number 6 to direct staff to bring back an annual report on the Children and Youth Full Service Partnership.
That's it. Very good. With
motion
that,
to approve all staff recommendations plus with the addition.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Madeline, very much. We will move on to correspondence.
This board has received from the Community Services Agency a copy of the fiscal year 2014-15 annual audit report of the Child Care and Development Alternate Payment Programs Stages 2 and 3 contracts by Brown Armstrong Accountancy Corporation, completed on November 10, 2015.
Acknowledge receipt of the audit report.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of the claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Any Board of Supervisor reports? No reports. Stan, CEO Stan Risen.
Yeah, staff would like to begin working with some of the board members on looking at some of our solid waste issues And with that in mind, we're going to bring back at your first meeting in January a request to establish a solid waste ad hoc committee that can help us as we look at look for policy direction on things such as our evergreen contracts, our recycling programs, and some of those types of things. So we're going to be bringing that request back. If you have an interest in serving on that ad hoc committee, if you'll allow, I guess it'll be Chairman Monteith by the January meeting. So if you'll just kind of let him know, and we'll look to establish that committee.
I'm sure we're all going to be competing for that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Seeing no other, this meeting is adjourned. Yeah.